Hello everyone, it's Maria.
And this is Jordan. Welcome back to Major Musings.
Welcome back to episode 2 of season 2. So nice to say season 2.
Yes, I know, it's so exciting.
Yeah, we appreciate all the love on our Instagram posts for the season premiere and just general support from people who have been excited to hear from us and that we're back. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I am very excited to do this episode and to tell you more about tell you and the listeners about my Copenhagen and Denmark research trip.
Yes, please. All about Per Kirkeby, who, you know, before you, honestly, I had no idea who he was. So
yeah.
I'm excited to learn about him.
Yeah, so it's great, honestly, that you said that, because that has been my experience when I tell a lot of people, even a lot of like my other friends and colleagues in my program here at ET, most people just aren't familiar with Kirkeby, which is really fascinating because in Denmark, he's one of their most celebrated modern painters. And even throughout the rest of Scandinavia and Europe, he's, you know, like fairly well known. And then in the US, there is just a lot less coverage of his art in whether it's in, you know, like academic books or museum exhibits. I mean, there have been exhibitions here and there across the US, and there are several museums here that do collect his work. But what's really interesting is that, you know, some of these big names that you might expect, like MoMA and the Met, while they do have his works, they're not any of like the major pieces. Like, they don't have oil paintings, they don't have some of these larger bronze sculptures or any sort of brick sculptures. And, you know, there's obviously nothing wrong with having, you know, like a chalk drawing or a print. You know, those are still valuable and worth looking at. But for serious museums like those, it just was surprising to me that they don't have any paintings or major sculptures.
That is surprising.
Yeah. And so that's the number one reason why I was like, I need to go back to Denmark. And for any longtime listeners of the podcast, you might remember, I think it was probably the first episode of our first season, that Maria and I talked about our trip to Denmark.
And then COVID hit.
Yeah. But when we went and when we were at the Louisiana Museum specifically, it was just perfect timing because they had a Per Kirkeby exhibit there.
Yeah.
And so I had like kind of, I knew about him a little bit before that, but seeing that exhibition, I was like, wow, these are really cool and interesting. And I, you know, you just never really hear about him over in the States. And so it always kind of was just, you know, sitting in the back of my mind of like, this would be interesting to write about. He seems like a really cool artist. And undergrad, I just, you know, didn't get the chance to do it. And so now here at UT, this was kind of finally, everything fell into place for me to work on him. So one of the professors here at UT, Richard Schiff, he's written about a lot of different modern and contemporary artists over the years. And Per Kirkeby is one of the artists who he's written about. Ooh. And he actually knew Per when he was alive.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. And honestly, before I came to UT, Richard wasn't really on my radar as a potential professor or scholar to work with. And then one of my PhD friends who's working with him told me about him and how he had written about Kirkeby. And so, it made a lot of sense for me to want to work with him, considering that he has firsthand knowledge and experience with him. And so he also suggested that that I go to Denmark, just because, you know, as art historians, it's important to see works in person.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I think, you know, so much of what we do nowadays, whether it's, you know, just like watching a movie or reading an article, reading a book, just passing the time, everything is through a screen. And while there are a lot of benefits to that, because, I mean, you just have access to a lot more media and material.
Sure.
You just, there's still something missing, you know? Like,
yeah.
The experience of being in person with an artwork just cannot be replicated through a screen. And so I was like, you know, I think I need to go to Denmark. And there, so I was, you know, I started to do some research last spring into where Kirkeby Works were located in Denmark, also in, you know, if there were any in the U.S., I was trying to find those as well. Mm-hmm. But in doing that research, I discovered that the Jorn Museum, so that is a museum dedicated to, or not dedicated, but it was partially, like, founded, and its main focus is for another prominent Danish modernist, Asger Jorn.
Mm-hmm.
So Per Kirkeby's archives were donated to that museum in Denmark.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. So Jorn was an important figure for Kirkeby because he was, because Jorn was Denmark's other kind of like golden modern child. Yeah. And so he looked to him as an example of another, you know, like a countryman, also very involved in the kind of avant-garde movements for his time. So like he did, he was involved in the Cobra movement, I think, which honestly, I don't know a ton about. I just know that Cobra stands for Copenhagen, Brussels, and Amsterdam, which are the names of the cities where some of the main artists originated from or were based out of. So I was like, okay, if I could, I would like to go to this museum. This museum, however, is not in Copenhagen, though. It's in this town called Silkeborg, which is about 3 hours outside of the city.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, this, you know, this would be fun. I'd get to see more of the country. And the museum is part of this other organization for, you know, museums around the world that are dedicated to one artist. So the Jorn Museum, the Dalí Museum, the Picasso Foundation or Museum. I think there's like a few different Picasso places, but
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, but so you get the idea. So
too many.
Yeah. Yeah. When I interned at the Dalí Museum 2 years ago, I worked with the executive director, and he was able to connect me via email to the director of the Jorn Museum, who in turn directed me to the head curator there. And that was really, really amazing because he was able to, you know, make sure that the archive was going to be open for me, to set up different materials and books that I was interested in. And yeah, that was kind of like, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself. That was the second step. So I want to tell everyone about the first step, which I kind of talked about in our last episode a little, but I'll go more into detail, I guess, just about my experience with it. So as I was doing this research and kind of, you know, coming to terms with the idea of going to Denmark, I'm like, you know, it's maybe not within my own personal budget to go there over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
However, UT every spring, summer, and fall semester will send out a call for applications for funding for travel. And, you know, they always say this is, you know, primarily for PhD students who need to travel for their research, but we also encourage MA students to apply. Okay. And I'm like, okay, this is, you know, intriguing. And I kind of like forgot about it. And then I was, you know, just sitting in my apartment over spring break on my little, you know, downtime. And I thought about that application again and how I would really like to go to Denmark. And I'm like, I'll just write an application. I'll throw together a little itinerary, because the amazing thing about the Museum Jorn is that if you are a scholar or researcher coming to the museum to do research, they have a little guest house that you can stay at for free.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is, like, so cool. Like, I don't know. I just totally was not expecting that to be an option.
Right.
But it's like, man, that's amazing. Like, if I can get out there to Silkeborg, that's at least, you know, one, two nights, however long I'm there, of free accommodation where I don't have to worry about paying for a hotel there.
Yeah.
So that is part of why I also was motivated to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put together an itinerary of, you know, going to the different museums that held works by Kirkeby, going to some of the sites in Copenhagen where he did public works. So whether that was like murals at the library and Natural History Museum or different brick sculptures as well. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I laid out a rough idea of where I would like to go, how long it would take. Also putting together transportation costs, so accounting for taking a train to Silkeborg, taking the subway or the train around Copenhagen, and then of course hotel as well. And so this, you know, I think for any academic person or anyone interested in doing research like this, making an itinerary for travel and research, it's a lot harder than you might expect because, you know, you have to make sure that museums are going to be open on days when you're going to be there and that you'll have time to go to the archives at this place and then, you know, get from here to there. And there's just a lot of logistics that I think
I bet,
I hadn't really thought about until I sat down and actually started to do it. But I mean, you know, Maria knows me that I'm a Virgo and I love planning and scheduling. So I really enjoyed planning my itinerary anyway. But
yeah, the itinerary was in your head before you even put it into fruition physically.
Exactly. And then it was just about finding like, what would be a good hotel area to stay at that isn't like super expensive? Because obviously, you know, trying to keep the cost down as much as you can because the smaller amount of money that you're spending is going to be, it's going to make you more likely to get approved by the university.
Yeah, for sure.
So once I did that, I knew that the professor Richard Schiff would already approve it because I had to get two faculty members to support this. And so I knew he would approve it since we talked about the trip already. And then the graduate advisor for my cohort, I had taken a class with him last semester and kind of talked to him about this research interest. And he seemed very supportive as well, with, of course, the caveat that, oh, you know, like, we do tend to give out most of the money to PhD students, but with that said, I, of course, like, I'll support you when this is brought up for discussion. So, so with his approval as well, I sent the application in. The professor who's in charge of scholarship and, you know, funds distribution, all of that, he emailed me and was like, thank you for the application. However, we do prioritize PhD students and we urge our MA students to choose projects where you don't have to travel internationally. So I can't promise you anything, Jordan.
Oh my God.
I'm like,
I remember you sending me the email, like a screenshot of it and you freaking out.
Yeah. And it's like, I know he wasn't trying to be snarky. Like he was just trying to be honest and blunt with it because, you know, didn't want to get my hopes up, but I was just like, great, like whatever, oh well, like if nothing happens, nothing happens. And so then I forgot about it for a little and I was like, oh, you know, maybe I can like try to go to New York over the summer to see the gallery that represents Kirkeby there, or the Phillips Collection in Washington DC actually does have a few oil paintings and sculptures.
Cool. Okay.
So that is also on my list to hopefully go to. But so I was like, maybe like I can go to DC and see the works there. I don't know, whatever. And then lo and behold, like a month later, I get an email saying, congratulations, Jordan, you've been awarded $1,900 for your travel this summer. And
oh my gosh.
I kid you not that I started crying and like almost hyperventilating. Aww. Because just because I truly did not think that I would get anything, just because they made it seem like
impossible.
They made it. Yeah, exactly. And you know, MA students typically don't travel abroad to do research on their thesis. So
I didn't even travel, period.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. A lot of MA students don't. So this is like very out of the ordinary. And so that's why I was so like overwhelmed with emotion. Cause I wasn't expecting to get anything. And so once I got that, which I also will say that it was a little less than what my initial proposal was, but at that point I was like, I don't even care.
Yeah. You made it work.
Exactly. Like $1,900 was plenty for the flight, the hotel, and any extra for the transportation of like the trains and subway. So, so that was kind of like the first step of securing that. And once that was done, then I finally actually reached out to the curator at the Yorn Museum to say like, hey, I'm a master's student from the U.S. I want to study per Kirkaby. I want to visit the museum this week in July. And I told him what I was kind of interested in, which I also will say is very broad still. Like, I had very, very broad ideas for what I was interested in for my thesis and then specifically for Kirkaby. Because I've kind of said it in passing already, but he worked in oil paintings, bronze sculptures, brick sculptures. He did, of course, you know, drawings. He did different prints, lithographs and whatever. Mm-hmm. He used chalk. And then he also made films. So he made his own films kind of early on in his career. And then later in his career as well, he collaborated with the Danish filmmaker Lars von Trier.
Oh, okay.
And as the cherry on top to all of this work, he also wrote a lot. Like, he wrote about other artists. He wrote about his own musings on art and his artistic inspirations, his experience with geology and going to Greenland, and kind of just like the philosophy of science as well. And so he has a lot of material and different types of artworks. And so I was like, I'm kind of interested in art that's related to nature. I like film. His oil paintings are gorgeous. Like, they kind of look abstract expressionist, but that's not really like the correct way to categorize them, because I mean, he didn't work in New York in the 50s.
Yeah.
But you know, they're pretty abstracted. So I was like, a lot of this trip is going to be kind of just exploration and figuring out what I actually want to write on.
Yeah. That's also what I mean, I guess you can say more later, but that is what I wanted to ask you, is that after this trip, have you kind of narrowed down what it is exactly that you're going to be writing on? Was there a moment in the archive that kind of made it click for you?
I would say yes and no.
Okay.
I think it did help me narrow it down, because prior to going, I was kind of interested in the fact that he went to Greenland, and that he has a lot of material from his various trips. Sure. And it's really interesting, and I think that I am probably not going to end up writing about it, though, for the thesis, at least. Because it's like, and I mean, you can also speak to this, I'm sure, but like, the thesis is long, yes, but also it's only 50 pages. And
Yeah,
and I think once you start writing, it's actually not that much.
Oh, 100%. I mean, not to take away from Per Kirkaby here, but since we're on this subject, when I was writing my thesis, I was writing about two exhibitions. They were on the same artist. It was kind of a consecutive survey exhibition from one institution to the other, so Tate Modern and the Pompidou. And each of those museums had about 14 rooms of Hatoum's work.
Wow.
I think I wrote about maybe three or four rooms.
Oh my God.
Total. Yeah. Because it's just absolutely impossible.
Yeah.
Granted, you know, it was exclusively about her, but my thesis also took up a lot of theoretical kind of exploration of globalization and of the larger museum framework. And I'm sure in the same way you're going to explore a lot of theories that will take up a huge chunk of your thesis as well.
Right.
But you also want to make room for, you know, adequate visual description and visual analysis to corroborate what you're trying to say theoretically. It's a lot.
Yes. And so that's why I'm like, okay, I can cross one of these areas of interest off my list for the thesis. And so we talked about this a little bit in the last episode as well, but the idea of utilizing a paper that you've already written for the thesis. So last semester, when I took a class with the professor Richard Schiff, I wrote a paper about Kirkaby and his contributions to the three Von Trier films. And Ooh. So, yeah, and so that paper, it really, like, it wasn't very long because he wanted for that writing, I guess, just kind of writing assignment. He didn't want it to necessarily be a long, serious academic paper like we're used to writing. He wanted it to be a little freer, and so there was no, like, page minimum or maximum.
Right.
It didn't have to be super academic. It could be a little more freeform, and so I think I have a lot of good ideas in that paper about how Kirkaby, you know, kind of, I'm trying to think of how to say it. He made the film feel very painterly. And so I was kind of looking at how a lot of his painting process kind of transitioned into a more filmic experience and how it took on a cinematic feeling, or how the film took on a painterly feeling. And so
that's a really interesting point.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we can share some of the clips from the films on our Instagram because they're beautiful, especially from the film Breaking the Waves. Like, oh my God, so stunning. So they're really, really lovely, and I'd really like to utilize some of the ideas that I was thinking through then. I want to expand on them in my thesis. Yeah. So I'd really like to hopefully keep that painting film aspect. But then, his brick sculptures are so cool. Like, especially the ones that are very large scale. They feel almost architectural, and I was really fascinated by them as well because, you know, obviously in the museum, you're limited by space because you're putting a sculpture inside an already existing building. So, so they're in the Jorn Museum as well as in the Statens Museum in Copenhagen. There were a few brick sculptures that felt a little architectural, but just on, you know, a smaller scale. But then in Copenhagen, I was able to see a few brick sculptures that were just kind of, you know, like out in the wild. And as well at the train station, when you got off in the little town where the Louisiana Museum is. So Maria, you actually would have seen this as well. But I think I didn't even realize it when we were there together. And we probably just walked right past it.
Straight to the museum. Yeah. I don't remember this, unfortunately.
It's okay. We'll post a picture on Instagram. Okay.
But on that note, just for reference, the pictures that we posted of you for this episode one release, one of them is of one of those brick sculptures outside, and you were standing in front of it, right?
Yes, that's correct. So, in the archives, I did read / kind of just skim, because I was trying to see as much as I could while
I was
there.
Of course, yeah.
But I did skim, and I took pictures of the essay to reference later about the brick sculptures. After seeing them in person and, you know, like walking around, feeling them, seeing how they interacted with the rest of the city, with the people in the city around them, I was like, oh, I feel like I really want to see what's there with them too. Like,
yeah,
how can I don't know. And you know, I think, see, now this will be interesting. Maybe we'll have to do like an update or something on what my thesis actually turns out to be. But I think if I need to cut something else, let's say, the brick sculptures probably would have to go, just because I think there's so much there within the painting and film that I already started to write about.
Yeah.
So I think I would prioritize that. But that's also to say that the brick sculptures were really, really amazing in person.
I'm sure they were.
Yeah. So along with the brick sculptures in the city, and not even just within Copenhagen, like they're in other countries as well. Like I think there's some in Germany and Sweden as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, Kirkeby also did public murals in different places around Copenhagen. So
okay.
I very briefly mentioned the library and the Natural History Museum, but those are two very prominent places where he's done public murals. And so the only unfortunate thing with the timing of when I was in Copenhagen, or just in Denmark specifically, was that for a lot of organizations and businesses, it was their summer holiday, so they were closed. Or they had adjusted times. Right. So, like, the day that I visited the library, the floor where the Kirkeby mural was closed by the time I got there. And I know, I was really bummed out because, you know, I did not realize, and I mean, this is maybe my fault for not checking, but I didn't realize that the floor that it was on would close at a different time than the rest of the library. So
That is a very peculiar situation.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I could not see that one close up. But
boo.
But the Natural History Museum, oh my gosh, such a stunning mural. I mean, you like walk in and you're in this little like entry hallway, and just the entire walls and the ceiling are all painted. And so these murals are so vibrant with the colors. Because, you know, typically museums, whether they're art museums or history museums, you know, sometimes you might get like a wall or a room that's like not white. But this, like, these are just, they're like artworks. They are artworks in themselves. And there's something very organic feeling about how he was able to render the texture. Like, it does feel like they're almost made of rocks or something, but also just the colors are just like, you would never find them, you probably would not find them in real life either, and it's just amazing.
My mouth has been open this entire time that Jordan's been speaking, because she sent me the pictures of the mural. Oh my god, that's insane.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how, like, fully immersive it was.
Yes, they're incredible. And
this is a modern-day version of the Sistine Chapel that I can get behind.
Yes, that makes me so happy to hear. Yeah, and it's cool because, you know, if you're familiar with Kirkeby's work, there are different motifs and symbols and shapes that he painted in this mural that you might recognize from some of his oil paintings and such. And so that the idea of like the motif is something that he was very interested in, and I also want to explore that in my thesis, just because it does appear so often in his paintings, in the films, in this public mural. And it's not even that it's like a motif that's like, oh, this is a flower or something, you know, like it's not necessarily a recognizable object, but it's just the idea of this symbol or this sign that is repeated and that has meaning. And so I've read like a very little bit about his thoughts on it. So that's going to be one thing that I want to explore more.
For sure.
Once I saw that mural, I was like, oh my God, I'm in love with this. And
honestly, you could write an entire thesis just on this mural.
Yeah. It's like, it almost doesn't feel appropriate to call it a mural because it's so...
No, because it's not. It's not the stereotypical, like, 2D wall from one end to the other. It's the whole freaking entrance hallway of the place.
And then
people, you'll know what we're talking about when we post the pictures, but my God.
Mm-hmm. And it even goes up the stairs onto a second floor where there's also kind of like a landing, like an entry area for you to sit, and that will lead you to other hallways for the exhibitions. So,
do you know how long it took him to paint this, or?
That is a good question. I actually don't know yet. That's only because I haven't looked into the specific details of this mural yet.
Yeah.
A lot of the publications that are related to exhibition, exhibition catalogs, a lot of the ones that were produced in the U.S., because they were for an exhibition, they talk about the paintings or the sculptures, which obviously are really great, but they're not necessarily talking about stuff like this that is found at a specific site, and that site is in Copenhagen. So that's why I have not yet delved into this specific work.
That's fascinating, though. I mean, you mentioned that there are some galleries that represent him in the United States, but still, a lot of his work isn't addressed, and I feel like as art historians, we often ignore site-specific installations because we may often not feasibly go see them and experience them. But, you know, this opens up a whole different avenue for you to potentially write about, is these site-specific installations of Kirkaby, whether it's sculptures, murals, you know, any of that, anything outside of the traditional kind of hanging on a wall at a museum.
Right, exactly. And seeing this work and having this emotional reaction to it was the reason why I so badly wanted to go to Denmark, because if I hadn't gone, I wouldn't have been able to see this. And you know, seeing it in pictures is one thing, and obviously you can still appreciate it, and like, I mean, you obviously had a wonderful reaction to seeing the pictures I shared with you. But even still, it's different than seeing it and being in that space in person.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
so
completely
different. Yeah, so it's like, for my thesis, I probably wouldn't be considering it. And even the brick sculptures, I don't know if I would be considering them as much as I am. Because, I mean, you know, we had our very brief encounter with the Humlebake brick station, or train station brick sculpture.
Yeah.
But as we said, we both walked right past it. We didn't
even
know.
Yeah, we didn't even know.
Which is a really interesting kind of thought experiment of, like, why, like, I don't know, just... thought experiment, and I'm not saying anything.
But it is a thought experiment, though, of what is considered as art.
Yeah.
Are you supposed to recognize that something is art for it to be art?
Right. And, like, the picture that we posted last week of me standing with one of the brick sculptures, that one was in Copenhagen, and it was a pair of them. So, like, I was standing with one at one end of the street, and then at the other end, which was, the street itself was kind of, I don't want to call it an alley because it was definitely bigger than an alley, but it was it was not necessarily a through street for cars. Like, it was mainly like pedestrian and biking.
Yeah.
And then cars could park there, like if you worked at one of the businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But so you had these twin sculptures at either end of the street, and I call them twins because I think that they are the same structure, but they might be mirrored, or they're slightly different. Like, they're not completely symmetrical. I want to say that they're mirrored or something like that.
Right.
But it's like you easily could walk past those too and not know. And I mean, Copenhagen, so many people bike there. And so
yeah,
a lot of people were using them, were using both of them as a place to rest their bike.
And, oh, interesting.
And the other one at the other end of the street, which I did not take a picture with, it had graffiti on it, which was kind of sad.
But oh, no. Also,
yeah, but also an interesting thing is that there was no plaque or sign anywhere denoting that this is a piece of artwork by Per Kirkeby.
Really?
Yeah, which I thought was very interesting because I feel like a lot of other places, you know, in the U.S. or around the world, public art often has some sort of little, like, plaque to say either, like, the title or the artist or something, or, like, even, like, what year it was made or, like, installed there. And, yeah, these had nothing. And, like, also the whole brick structure at the train station, too, also had nothing, which I think is partly why we probably just walked past it. Because it's like,
right.
If there had been like a sign or even something on the ground, you would notice that and you would say, oh, maybe I'll read this and see what this thing is. Because obviously it's something if there's a sign for it. But yeah, these all just were...
hide in plain sight.
Exactly. Which is also very interesting. And so that's something I want to look into as well. Like, why he chose to do that. Was it intentional? I don't know. Like, so there's a lot of questions still.
but you said he's written extensively, right? So
yeah, he wrote a lot.
Hopefully you can find some of your answers there.
Yeah. And like, so some of the material in the archives naturally was in Danish, and I'm like decent at reading Danish. Like I'm pretty proud of the level I've been able to achieve through self-teaching. However,
Hashtag Duolingo.
Yes.
Sponsor us.
However, I'm not quite good enough to read a whole article in a moment.
Yeah. No.
So it was one of those things where I'm like, okay, I'm gonna just take a bunch of pictures, and once I'm back in Austin, I can like sit down
carefully
and like translate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I know, I think one of the essays that I took a picture of, I think it is about the brick sculptures. So I'm excited to eventually get to that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, it really was such an amazing trip. And
I'm so glad to hear that.
I feel so incredibly lucky that I was able to get the funding to go because,
yeah.
I mean, really, it just probably wouldn't have been in my budget to travel to Europe this summer.
No.
And, you know, as master's students, we aren't funded like PhD students are. So,
right, yeah.
I mean, whether you're at a public university like UT or a private one like UChicago, they just don't give money to graduate or to master students.
No, they don't. They just take it. Sadness.
Exactly. So, yeah, so I'm very grateful. Grateful to the professors who, you know, like, I don't want to say stood up for me, but, you know, supported me in the faculty meeting of like, yeah, we think that you should be able to get money to go to Denmark.
Yeah, for sure. And it's very valuable work.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like, you know, no offense to anyone who researches Picasso, but it's not like someone said, I want to travel to, I don't know, Spain to see Picasso's work. You can find Picasso anywhere.
Right.
You know, the Per Kirkeby is a very isolated and, I guess, unique situation that, of course, the archives would have been an invaluable resource for you, so.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just being able to make the connections of speaking with that curator and, you know, interacting with the people at the Jorn Museum. I mean, hopefully, whether I need more materials later on in my writing process, or if in future years I, you know, do a dissertation about him, whatever it is, I really hope that I'll be able to utilize that museum and their resources again, because it really was great. And I mean, even, and also just as like an aside, like from a non-academic point, it was just a really fascinating experience because, you know, Copenhagen is like it's a relatively big city and it's like the major tourist destination for Denmark and international tourist destination.
Yeah.
Because then going to Silkeborg, very different, like just so much quieter. I mean, the town I think has like either 30 or 40,000 people in it.
Oh.
And it's in this area of Denmark that's kind of known for their lakes. Like, they call it, like, lake country.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it very beautiful. Like, the train ride there was, except for the fact that they did not have AC on the train, and it was a staggering 96 degrees, like, literally the hottest day in Denmark history. But,
oof.
But besides that, it was really beautiful, and I think literally everyone else who we came across there was Danish. Like, there were no other foreign tourists who were there. And it was, it was really cool. I didn't really know what to expect, but I wasn't really expecting that. And it was a really fun experience. And, you know, I feel like the Scandinavian people, I think, have a reputation of just being kind of, like, cold and standoffish, but I found everyone to be so friendly and helpful, and you know, it does help that a lot of the people there speak English very well, so there's not like a language barrier usually,
right?
But yeah, it was really cool, and it was a really amazing museum, and it's off the beaten path for a typical tourist who's just like going to different European cities, but I encourage anyone, if you go to Denmark, you should try to go to Silkeborg and the Museum Jorn, because it is
noted.
It's a lovely museum.
I will keep that in mind. Yeah. Maybe I'll find my way back there someday.
Yes, we can do Denmark part 2 without COVID.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Several
years later.
Yeah, exactly. But otherwise, yeah, that was kind of my research trip
slash intro into Perkirkaby.
I the semester just is starting now. As we're recording, it's the first week of classes. So one of the other, I'll kind of like wrap up this episode and this story kind of by saying that one of the other classes that I'm going to be taking this semester is not even really a class, but it's what we call a reading tutorial. And so that is where I'm going to be working one-on-one with a professor who will help curate specific readings for me based on my interests. And so, I think we might have talked about it before, but at UT for the thesis, you have to put a colloquium together and a committee, which, I mean, normally you might not have to do that for a master's, but UT has you put together a 5-person committee. And so, of course, you have your primary advisor, and then you have your secondary advisor, or like second reader as well. And so those are the two most important people. And so the professor who I asked to be my second reader, Anne Reynolds, she actually was the professor who I initially was interested in working with at UT.
Okay.
But so I asked her to be my second reader because she's an amazing scholar, and so I'm going to be doing a reading tutorial with her. And so going to the archives and narrowing down specifically what I'm interested in, I was able to tell her what I was specifically interested in reading more about. So
beautiful.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to doing that with her as well. We have our first meeting at the time of recording this. I will be having my first meeting with her tomorrow, so.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, so, yeah, this semester, I think I'm just going to be reading a lot of different things related to Kirkaby, and I'm very excited.
That's great to hear. Yeah, I'm excited for you, and we're all excited to hear updates from you as you go. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm very glad that I got to tell you more about my trip and to tell all the listeners. And so now you get to tell me what you're going to talk about next time.
Oh, okay. So this is an artist I
found out about as I was at UChicago. She was also working in the 20th century. Her name is Baya Mahyuddin, but she actually just went by Baya for the longest time. Not for the longest time, like her whole life. So I will be referring to her as such as we move forward. But she rose to fame when she was 16 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's a lot there. She was close to Picasso. They went to the same ceramic studio over the summers. There's, you know, there's theories that she inspired. She's Algerian, so there's theories that she inspired his Les Femmes d'Alger, or the Women of Algeria paintings. So a lot of complexities there between him being, you know, a white European man and her being a young girl who supposedly has inspired this very erotic, very kind of exoticized, you know, orientalist painting. So there's a lot there that I unpacked in some of my research on her. So
cool.
I will go into more detail about that in the next episode, but I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Yeah, that should be really fascinating.
Yeah. So I guess that's it for us today. Thanks to everyone who tuned in, and thank you to Jordan for sharing.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and we will see you all next time.
See ya. Bye.